And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart, the established man himself, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir.
Blake, are you excited to talk about Virginia Tech? Who would have thought that that would have been on the radar?
So, unfortunately, because I was doing things today, I watched a lot of their games, and what I normally do is right before the show, I want to. I don't want to see stats before I watch film of a team. Like, don't show me your stats. Don't show me what you did. I want to see the film before I see anything. Buddy, we got a discussion on our hands here tonight.
They have one of the most underrated teams in all of college football, and I think it goes in line with what we talked about a few weeks ago when we talked about NC State. The ACC might be this year's Pac-12 for good and for bad. They might be the conference that puts out a ridiculous amount of teams into the top 25, not maybe to the playoff, but they might have a lot of top 25 teams like the Pac-12 did last year, and then they could hilariously crumble right at the very end of it because of Florida State, North Carolina, Miami, and Clemson trying to get out of the conference.
All right, now calm down. Okay.
What was so outlandish? There was no hot take there. What was hot takey about that?
You're saying that, and we'll get into this, but you're saying that they could be a ranked team. Well, they're a ranked team because they could get there, Virginia Tech, after looking at their schedule because of who they play.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you can't say the conference is going to be better than we thought, like the Pac-12. Like, we didn't see Arizona coming in out of anywhere. I mean, we really didn't truly know what Colorado was going to be, and we didn't know that what – me and you talked a lot about Washington last year, but we didn't think – I mean, you did. The country didn't think that Washington would take that step for a national title. So I understand what you're saying. I'm just very cautious because what the Pac-12 did last year isn't very normal. Like, it is the – you know, what's the, how's the old saying go? It's the adage, not the rule. So – I know a lot of people, myself included, have said this about the ACC. Do we need to calm ourselves down just a tad?
I don't think so. I really don't, because we look at last year what the Pac-12 was, which was two really good teams in Washington and Oregon, and then following them were a lot of really competent, quality programs that were all eating each other up throughout the season. So we had Oregon State. We had Arizona. We had... at one time, Washington State was pretty good, and then they completely fell off. UCLA looked really good at in spurts, but was a bit inconsistent because of their offense. There were a lot of quality programs, and I don't think it's unrealistic to say they won't put out more than two playoff teams. I don't think that that's possible for them. But I don't think it's crazy to say at the end of the year that they have four or five ranked teams. We've done a lot of previews, and we've said because of how stretched out the scheduling is. Most of these teams do not play each other that we have highlighted in the ACC. There's a real shot that a lot of them could go 8-4, 9-3.
Will be very interesting, but I don't disagree, but I'm very wary of doing that. But a team that we'll talk about today in Virginia Tech, they got some dudes, and I don't think the nation understands how good that they've been defensively. So we'll talk about that. Yeah. Also, Brent Venables gets a contract extension. Joe, why were people freaking out about this? Why are people freaking out about Brent Venables getting this extension?
Well, the really common thing that happened the other day was that a lot of people were pulling the stats on Jimbo and his contract and when he got the extension and trying to compare and say Jimbo had better production when he got his extension, and look how that turned out. I think it's justified for people.
That's not true.
Some people framed it that way. You can frame any stats to make it look right. You can frame anything to make it look better.
Okay, you gave Jimbo an extension after a COVID year.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
very different circumstance, which is why I didn't agree with people doing this.
Well, and it's a 6-year extension, so he's got 8 years. I would assume around $80 million. Joe, he's probably going to coach two more years no matter what, I would assume. So there's no way in human hell that they're going to pay him over $90 million to walk away.
Because, I also don't.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't think a lot of people understand the contract details, like you're just saying.
Well, I mean, look, we talk about Jimbo being fired. Brother, everybody, that whole staff got cut. Whole staff got fired, right? So with that being said, okay, I just wanted to make it very well known that, yes, Jimbo got $75-ish million to walk away, but the staff cost about $15 million too. So, I mean, like, you got to be careful when you talk about, like, oh, well, it's just like Jimbo. Okay, not really.
Right.
But here's the question. Here's what I want us to talk about. What do you think about the extension? And we'll get into that. Yeah. But you can give a little preface.
I'm going to wait till we get to this segment. But Oklahoma fans think we don't like him for some reason. I actually don't think that this is a bad decision. I think there's a lot of context missing that was completely ignored by the typical overreaction mob on Twitter when it comes to stuff happening in college football. There's always the crowd that goes, oh, what a joke. What a joke that this happened. And I don't think a lot of people understand the reasoning that could have gone into this, why it could make sense.
He's got 2 years left on his contract. You know what recruits are asking? Are you going to be here?
Exactly the point.
So, I mean, you might need it. Now, a 6-year extension, I understand, but that's just the way the contracts are worked these days. And Oklahoma fans should know, I mean, their boosters and their front office is, we're seeing right now through what they've done in the portal, they're not scared to spend money.
No, if they like the results, I don't think it hurts for him to get the protection that he's
looking for. They think that they're making the playoff. Let me just tell you, Oklahoma fans. Oh yeah. Oh dude, they don't talk to you on social media, but like I talked about them a while back. I went on an Oklahoma show, and you would have thought that I was saying that I said they were going to be a 9-3 team. They were like, we have the talent for the playoff. I'm like, no, you don't.
9-3 might have been a generous take by you, too.
I know. I had them upsetting somebody. I forget who, but, you know, I mean, Joe, they could be 8-3 going into Death Valley at night, okay, which it appears that that's going to be a night game because ESPN released the schedules at night in the last game that could send either team to the playoff. Good luck, Bucko. Good luck. Good luck. By the way, just LSU is like 90-10 in the last 100 night games, Bucko. So you might want to calm down.
If they didn't get their – which smaller playoff
why
last year.
Why don't you Bucko? I sound like a white dad of two kids. Which
well, yeah, wait, what are you?
Yeah.
If they couldn't get to the playoff and win the Big 12 last year, I don't know why there's this expectation that they're going to – bulldoze through the SEC. And I guess this is why the Oklahoma fans didn't really like us after we were a little bit too honest in our deep dive.
Yeah. Sucks to be them. Yeah. Joe, also, Kalen DeBoer, can he recruit? I think that he's starting to answer some of those questions. Maybe we'll get to that, but then the June signing period being tabled for now. Hot take.
Okay.
Everything that they had out there for the June timeline did not protect players whatsoever. Like, at all.
Oh, I understand what you're saying.
Okay. So, I just want to let it be known. I know coaches want the ability of guys to sign in June. To a player, that might be a little unrealistic. Because, Joe, the truth is, a lot of these kids mainly have big years. There's more change from a junior rising into his senior year than any other recruiting aspect. Joe, more than a third of the kids of like in the top 1,000 move up, the others stay stagnant, and then the other ones move down. It's a like there's kids that come out of nowhere. Don't let them sign in June. Now, I don't know how you feel about this. I get coaches want it, and I understand why they need it. June's a little too much to me.
I agree that it's probably a little too early on in the process. And you're 100% right. Just from natural physical athlete development, these kids are not going to hit their peak. Most of them do not hit their peak until they're senior. Some of them don't until they're in college. So there's a lot on the table here for a lot of these kids. I don't think most of them would actually sign and commit in this early signing period if it was available. But the logistics of it, they need to figure out what that new timeline is, because the current timeline still does not work. It just doesn't. And I don't know when that would be. It should just go back to being February. February was fine.
Well, they still have February. I mean, they still have February. I understand it. Well, I understand it because more kids are early enrolling. I have a hot take for you. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be highly controversial, and I understand it's highly controversial. If coaches are going to have the ability to openly pay players through NIL and do what they do in NIL, you might have to suffer through going through the playoff during signing day. Sorry.
It's going to happen.
I understand it's going to happen, but you can only table it so much. I mean, this is the third time they've tabled this. Now, it's being reported that it's not, but I'm in recruiting. I remember it came up last summer. I remember it came up in 2020, and then in 2021 during the pandemic, because of how, you know, things were moving with kids. Joe, this is going to be the fourth time now they've tabled this. So I think it's ultimately going to pass sometime in the summer? Yeah, I actually do. Okay. However, I mean, all the evidence points to that it's not, and we just don't have a lot to talk about too. So we'll get into it there as well. Gash Blitz, here come the Oklahoma fans, says any coach not named Nick Saban will not be able to recruit like Nick Saban in Alabama. Not a knock on DeBoer. That's just the reality of the situation. We'll talk about it.
That's not a hot take. I mean, to say that nobody can be as good as Nick Saban.
It was a hot take. He said it was a fact. Yeah. And it is a fact. But
I don't disagree with that point.
We're going to have a serious conversation about Kalen DeBoer here, bud.
Yeah. Part of me wants to talk about that tomorrow, because I would like to actually have a long conversation about it.
Okay.
You're right. You brought this up pre-show. Serious convo.
Well, how about this? Okay. Let me just give a quick preface to, because we might not get to it. I just want to open up tonight's show by saying that there, myself included, I will admit where I was not, and I wasn't even necessarily wrong. I didn't think that he would recruit the way that he was recruiting. So just so we have it in this show before we talk about it deeply, there are a lot of people in the South who have clowned this man, called him Brian Harsin. Okay, I understand where you're trying to go with that. The dudes have the number 3 overall class. And I think, Joe, here's the biggest thing in all of that. You could have been the head coach. People don't understand the booster base at Alabama. They don't understand the lengths that people will go to in Tuscaloosa to be a contender and a winner. Saban had the discount for a lot of years. Doesn't mean that Bama doesn't have money and won't outspend people. So I just want to make it very well understood before tomorrow morning and Monday hits that we don't have something on the record by saying you're an idiot by continuously going after this man. By the way, Joe, he's trending for 3 now, 5-star wide receivers.
Well, and I think the biggest part here is that the decision by Keelan Russell to decommit from SMU and then commit to Alabama, that was something that was clowned on for some reason. And there were a lot of people.
Elite 11.
Yeah, a lot of anyone who clowned on that, I was like, do you guys realize that Keelan Russell's been one of the biggest trending recruits throughout this process?
Oh, by the way.
I thought it was one of the dumbest takes when I saw that.
Well, look, listen. I'm going to get on my fan base.
It was coming from LSU.
First off, let me defend the fans. It's not actually coming from the fan base. It's coming from one media head. Okay.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
I don't think truly, and I mean this just as I see it, no harm on anything. the dude has like openly went after or said that there was going to be a specific baseball recruit that went to LSU baseball. He got not even the wrong name. He got the wrong person. He got everything wrong. So like I look at like the media out of LSU is hitting this. Nobody around here agrees with that.
Okay, good. Good.
Okay.
It was a bad was a very bad take to frame it as Alabama's taking a kid from SMU. This is so pathetic.
LSU fans want Bama to be bad so bad, but don't understand. Mm. Some of them idiotically don't understand when the little man said goodbye. It doesn't change the rivalry in reference to Alabama and LSU always having history. It changes the rivalry massively.
Yeah. Absolutely.
People call me crazy. LSU A&M are more of a rival now with Saban gone, in my opinion, than anything.
Well, especially everything that we saw happen this past week. Yeah, that's absolutely.
I have no idea what you're saying. I have no idea what you're talking about. I did absolutely wrong. By the way, I had somebody in my DMs before we get rolling. This was a really good one. A couple of A&M fans attacked me this week, but none better than Jack, okay, who said, "You're the most obnoxious and retarded person that's ever been on this platform." And he spelled retarded wrong, and he spelled obnoxious wrong. Then what? He said also, "Learn proper grammar and lose 150 pounds. Hold on here, bitch.
You so, said this to me, and I didn't realize that he misspelled it. Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. That's so goddamn funny. All right, we got a lot to get to. Let's
get rolling. Everybody do us a favor by hitting the like and share to all those groups. If you're on Facebook, share to all those social media pages. You're watching us, listening to us on YouTube. Like, subscribe, notification bell, and wherever you listen to podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. Let's talk about our good friends over at BetOnline.ag. Brent Venables got an extension. We talk about that next. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way for you to wager on all of your favorite sports, contests, events, with the first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews for all the news for each league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, college sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all of your sports information for live, in-game betting, props, and futures. Head on over to BetOnline today and use your mobile device to join and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50, that's BELIEVE50, BLEAV50, to receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's BetOnline.ag, BetOnline.ag.
We're back!
You know what else is back? Our Instagram. I want everybody to go over to Instagram and follow us. Okay.
Okay. I guess I need to start posting on there again.
By the way, I was never an Instagram person.
Uh-huh.
I'm in love.
Why? You texted me about this the other day. I
love it. Yeah. I love it. All right. So go over to the gram.
Big Instagram guy now, I guess.
I guess so. Well, I get to see the people that are viewing it, and the people that are viewing it, I knew you were always watching. You know, like, it. I'll tell you off air. It's really weird.
Okay.
Really weird.
All right. Tell me.
Notre Dame fans got to stay out of the out of the gram.
All right.
Brent Venables got a contract extension this week, Joe, in which, ironically, I guess, sent Twitter into and really just the whole college football fan base of everywhere into a tizzy. I was kind of perplexed that people were saying this about Brent Venables. Like, did they not think a contract extension was coming? Or your thoughts on Brent Venables getting an extension?
Yeah, I think if you look at it on the surface level, you understand why a lot of people were trying to clown on this. He was 10-3 this past year, but they were 16-10 in his first 2 years. For him to get an extension just at face value, it sounds pretty crazy. Are we not getting ahead of ourselves. Well, when we add all this other information that one, it's an extension that only takes him through 2029. It's a $51.6 million contract. He's only making $8.5 million a year annually. That doesn't even put him in the top 10 of active coaches. There are eight SEC coaches that are currently making more than him. There actually might be more than that, but I couldn't even find enough info of coaches that are making more than him in that range of just SEC coaches. But 8.5, mm-hmm. what he's expected to make, not a crazy number. I understand why this was done. They're going into their first year in the SEC. I think Brent Venables and his agent are smart enough to see that they've got the fourth hardest schedule in the country. And there's a possibility that the results don't hit as they would hope in their first year in the SEC. We talked about, we think that there is a possibility they get 7-8 wins. If there's injuries, things don't go according to plan, whatever it might be. So on their side, they want protection. They want time to continue to build this. They want to know that they're going to get the support, and Venables wants to know he's going to get the support for the long term so he can turn to recruits and tell them, hey, I'm going to be here until 2029, and he is not going to be rushed out the door. This is nothing like the Jimbo Fisher situation. It's nothing like the Jimbo situation, as you said in the open. There is a vast, vast difference. There is not $90 million that needs to be paid out if this doesn't work out. It is much smaller than that.
Yeah, and you would think that he's going to get two seasons, right? Like, and I think he's going to get a pass this year regardless because of, one, number one, he's recruiting. Number two, that you're going into a new conference. Yeah. And look, Joe, who's to say that they don't win nine games? I mean, who's to say? So, I mean, we've talked about them. They got a lot of question marks. You know, what does Jackson Arnold do? They have an offensive line that's up in flux. Joe, on the defensive side of things, they're not that way. Okay, like this team could – I mean, is there a realistic nature that they could have nine wins in year one or year one in the SEC? Yes.
Totally.
I agree with you in reference to this not being Jimbo, which was probably the biggest thing that I saw that people were pushing back on. And I'm like, dude, this – like it's not even remotely comparable. Okay, because you gave this man $100 million guaranteed. Like, that's not – I mean, if you get to a $50 million type of buyout, I understand that. Things can be reduced. All I'm saying here is I understand, but that's what the going rate is for a coach. If you want to be on the premier, you got to show everybody in the country that you will pay premier top dollar for you to come here. Oh, by the way – there were a lot of people. I remember a lot of people who said during the Lincoln Riley thing nationally, not fan base, nationally, that said that, well, Oklahoma just couldn't compete with USC when it came to paying what they need to pay. Well, that's come to pass in reference to look what they've done in recruiting. You know, the Demonic Williams thing was a big time deal. If they're really paying that much for recruits. Joe, but the main thing about what I didn't understand about this and why I don't think it's a big deal, and I'll get to on-field in just a minute. Joe, we have a recruiting aspect that we have to understand here. If yes. I'm a parent, okay, and me and my family or my son and my family are trending towards Oklahoma, as a father, I'm going to be thinking in the back of my mind, well, hey, man, this guy's only going to be here for 2 years. I mean, he's only got a 2-year contract. Oh, we might be going, my son might be a freshman by the time that this guy's on the last year of his contract. Why would I send my son to a place that I don't know if you're fully balled in on him? It's always been a recruiting tactic. It's why Jimbo got extended. Yeah. So the next year they were coming off the best recruiting year ever, literally by the number. So they did what they needed to do in A&M. The problem was is that Jimbo didn't adapt. That's not on A&M's fault. A&M did exactly what they needed to do to make Jimbo successful. Okay? Oh, well, it failed. Well, do you think that Alabama, do you think Georgia, do you think – I'm going to say this, but hold on. Notre Dame. Notre Dame has changed some ways to start helping Marcus Freeman in recruiting.
Yes, that's true. You're not wrong there. That we've talked about this. They've made less restrictions on admitting guys.
You got to show that you're all in from a recruiting aspect. But Joe, you talk about on the field, and this is a tricky situation. He is 16-10, but you know we've also seen like everybody wants to say, "Oh, I can't believe they extended him." Joe, we've literally seen national championship level coaches. I'm not saying Brent Venables is, but first year go 6-7, second year go 9-3 or 10-3, third year go to a national title. Huh. I wonder who's done that, Mr. Blake. Oh, well, the greatest coach of all time. Not did it once. He did it twice in the SEC. Yeah. Okay, at two different programs. So I know everybody wants to go to one extreme and always be on the negative side of things, but you got to look and be positive in reference to, look, man, they're not a bad football team right now. And you thinking that they could come, Joe, they're going to upset somebody that they shouldn't or come really goddamn close to doing it. So all I'm going to say is that I don't understand the Venables hate when he literally is coming off a 10-win season.
And I think that this is why I freaking hate, and you did a really good job of like painting this picture. I freaking hate when we try to compare players' history, coaches' history, whatever it might be. Every coach that's done something in these power conferences, you'll always see someone pull a reference to Nick Saban like you just did. And I'm not knocking you for doing that. My point is that we can find comparisons with statistic and numbers easily. It's so freaking easy, which is why I think it's so stupid to do the whole Jimbo comparison. They're nothing alike.
I mean, Joe, historically speaking, when you talk about where was Brent Venables? Clemson. Oh, okay. Well, successful coaches in the SEC have historically done what? Rebuild year one, establishing year two, contender year three.
He's also been a head coach before, too.
You know what you could be? You could be Florida.
Well, right. This is also another very good point is that you look at, and I think that Billy Napier, the amount that he's making is like 7.5, something like that. It's not far off from the amount that Venables is now making. God forbid, entering a new conference, he and his agent feel that they want to get him more security and more money that is comparable to the market. Like, well, why are we shocked by this? This is how contract negotiations work in any industry.
Well,
any opportunity to make more money, you're going to use it.
I mean, dude, but look at who Brent Venables has been with his entire career. I mean, guys that are national championship coaches. Joe, what's the likelihood? And I hate to say it like this. DCs or OCs that have been on national contending teams historically pan out. You can point to so many different scenarios in the NFL and college football. That's literally how your head coach came up. Your head coach just didn't just get a head coaching job in his first gig and work his way up. It's not how it works. Now, Brian Kelly did, okay? But when I did my research, he was like the only one. He coached softball. So I'm like, holy shit, you mean the dude with the most wins in college football at the current moment literally was coaching football and softball at a Catholic school? So what's it? Now, here's a comparison of what I was going to go into with you here. I understand that Venables had a bad year one, but I think that Venables had a tougher situation than what a Dan Lanning did, okay, as an example. Joe, what's the real difference at this exact moment between Dan Lanning and Brent Venables?
What's different?
Yeah,
one coach got to a conference championship game.
Both of them are 10-win teams.
Yeah, but Lanning's first year was also much better than.
But he didn't have to replace the situation that what Venables did.
Man, I want to pull an old video of you. I pulled that comment and I said exactly those words. I said, I give Brent Venables the benefit of the doubt. I think it was this time last year. I said, I give him the benefit of the doubt.
I'm not saying this is my take. Hold on. I'm asking you. What's the difference between him and Brent Venables and Dan Lanning?
The difference is Brent Venables took over a team that was completely a ripped apart roster because Lincoln Riley left and took a bunch of dudes with him and the rest left to go to other schools. It was a really messed up first year situation. The starting point, Dan Lanning took over an already established roster that had been recruited well for multiple years by Mario Cristobal. That's the difference.
And which a lot of guys didn't leave. Guys stayed there. So, I mean, there comes a point in, look, man, it's very difficult to have, when you're a new coach, 10-win seasons. Now, you got it in the Big 12. Now, here's the real question mark. If you want to know if Brent Venables really works or not, wait until he sees this schedule. Because he's got a move. Okay? So, but you can't go into a situation scared, oh, we might owe this guy a crap load of money. You're going to have to spend money to make money. As the old, I know it's a Billy Napier saying, but no, that's been a saying for long before Billy, and it'll be one long after him. I just fully believe in my heart that you can't look at a coach in year two and say, hey, he's not having us in the right way by what he's done.
I also think, too, that what was misconstrued when we did our deep dive, if with this difficult schedule they go 8-4, I don't think that that's a bad season. I'm not projecting.
I don't think it's a bad season either.
It's really not. And I don't think it proves that he didn't deserve the extension if they go 8-4. If they go 5-7, yes, absolutely. Okay. We're going to revisit this and we're going to be saying,
well, and then the old Shimbo type of situation, but they're not doing that. That's not happening.
No.
Because historically, too, man, defensive head coaches, okay, they are having to make adjustments all the time. So when you need to make offensive adjustments, they're like, yeah, okay, all right. You know, like when Saban said that all DCs should be a part of the Taliban, that's how much – I mean, all OCs should be a part of the Taliban because we're always, you know, having to innovate. They're like, I hate them like I hate the Taliban. So – all I'm saying here is I think that the year one is the core. I was trying to say all this to finish with this.
Yeah.
The reason people are out on Brent Venables is because of the core in year one that he had, or the bad year he had in year one. But Dan Lanning, as an example, had a very better situation. Brian Kelly had a very bad situation too, but he's been a head coach for 97 years. Okay, the man has literally rebuilt three other places. This going to be number four. I just don't think it's fair to him, which I was trying to get at this entire time, but yep. Painting a 15-minute picture on how to do it.
Well, it's good radio, painting a 15-minute picture. That's how you do it. But I agree with you. I think that it's okay to feel cautious about the outcome of this, but at the same time, his situation is very, very, very unique. And we need to understand that there is a runway for this to work out. It just might not be right away. And an 8-4 season does not mean that this contract extension was a failure. And more importantly, he has not been given a deal that makes him a top five highest paid head coach. That's not what we're saying to him.
Which is so wild here.
Yeah.
So wild. Anyway. All right. You want to get to Virginia Tech here?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Joe, we continue on our deep dives. And this time we go to Virginia, not the Cavaliers. We're going to Virginia Tech.
Hokies.
The Hokies.
What is a Hokie?
It's a turkey.
I know, I'm joking. It's a very commonly said thing.
I'll never forget this as long as I live. I have a really good friend, David Hofstetter, and his dad, God rest his soul. We were talking about the LSU game when we were in high school at David's house. And he said, you know, David said, wait, they're playing Virginia Tech this weekend? Or somebody said that. I'm like, yeah, the Hokies. And his dad, you know, big Bruley guy, was like, hey, what's a Husky? And I goes, it's a turkey. And he points at me, you know, like to say, like, he thought that he was going to stump my sports knowledge of what their mascot was. Okay. That's when I knew I'd have a college football podcast. Uh-huh. Nevertheless, we go to Virginia Tech. In another edition of our deep dives here, Joe, I'll kick it off to you. I got to admit, defensively, the film kind of blew me away a little bit at times. Yeah. There was one area that I thought got roughed up a little bit, but Joe, they attacked, they went after dudes. three guys. There's only one other team besides Virginia Tech that had three guys with double-digit tackle for loss on the season. It was Michigan. The Michigan Wolverines, the national champion. This defense, and then when you look at what they did statistically, Joe, I don't know if Virginia Tech's not a team that we might need to talk about.
Well, that's why we're talking about them. Quick note before I give my thoughts on this team. Virginia Tech, probably the coolest stadium I've gotten to play in when I was playing at Rhode Island.
Okay.
Played them a couple, not a couple years ago. That was 2019. God damn, that was forever ago. That was five goddamn years ago.
You were a senior when Joe Burrow was absolutely lighting everybody up?
Yes. I was in college the same time that Joe Burrow was, but he was a few years older than me, I think. But regardless, also technically a Hokie fan because my brother went there, his fiance went there, they met there at Virginia Tech, so I'm indirectly some relationship here why I forced us to talk about them.
Okay.
I do think, though, that when we look at this Virginia Tech team, ball knowers know that the Hokies have a really good roster. They've got a really good defense, and more importantly, Brent Pry, we forget a couple of years ago, was one of the best defensive coordinators in the country, good enough to earn himself an ACC job taking over for one of the most historic coaches in all of college football in Frank Beamer. He takes over. This defense has slowly gotten better. You mentioned the production that they have, but the big reason why I am high on them, not to be a playoff team, but why they could be a 9-win team in 2024 is because of Kyren Drones, who in the last four games of the season, their offensive production exploded to the point where they were averaging 43 points per game, and Drones had 151 passes without an interception in a stretch during the season. So I look at all of that, the fact that the offensive line returns all of their starters plus 122 career starts amongst all of those guys and also some of their backups. This team is experienced in the right spots. And Kyren Drones is a great mix of athlete, accurate, explosive passer, like we saw in the final four games. If that version of him shows up for this entire 2024 season, I think that the Hokies are going to be that team that will piss off and annoy some of the top teams in the ACC and potentially knock off some of them.
I still question how explosive they are on the outside. I know Hokie fans are going to kill me on that. You didn't have a receiver that went over 700 yards. I know that Drones down the stretch had some really good production. Can he develop and take that next step? I think is what everybody wants to know here. Now, his name did come up, if you remember, Joe, some, when we were talking about kids that may hit the portal. Remember when Auburn didn't get a dual threat type of kid? Drones was a guy that people thought that can go in there. Joe, I'm a little wary, though, a 58.2% completion percentage guy. But I do like the decision-making. So what is it? Okay. I don't know if it's decision-making because the kid did not turn the ball over a lot. Like hardly at all. Was very efficient at not turning the ball over. I do question accuracy. Okay. Down the stretch, he was a little bit better. But can he take that next step? I think it's going to be the big thing for them. Where I look at them, though, look, I can look at the entire offense and say I think they'll have a really good running game. I don't know how well they'll throw the ball. But, Joe, if you can run it and play good defenses, which I think that they're going to do, might be a pretty big deal here for the Hokies down the stretch. Joe, like I mentioned, only two teams had three players with 10 tackles for loss or more. But, look, man, you're bringing back so much production. Powell returns. He had 9.5 sacks last year, 14.5 tackles for loss. You bring in Jenkins, Payne, all those guys had double-digit tackle for loss. So when I look at them, from Alabama. So when you look at them, I just ask the solid question, are they Louisville of last year? Could they be a team that at the end, well, technically they're playing for it. Like technically you got to keep an eye on them because, look, they upset Notre Dame. They do all these things. What happens with them is going to be a big question mark.
I also, one of the guys that they brought in that I'm a very, very big fan of, Aeneas Peebles, who they brought in from Duke. We knew that Duke defensive line was really good, and he was one of the key contributors on that D line. So they bolstered a unit that was already really strong for them by bringing in Peebles. It just feels like the right mix of things where maybe they're not elite in every single in any category, but they're just really strong and consistent. I think the way that you're explaining it, where they could be Louisville, where they upset a team, maybe they have a silly loss that they weren't supposed to, which Louisville did last year, and then they can be knocking on the door of the ACC championship game. I don't think that they're going to be a playoff team. I just don't. And you mentioned there with Drones, where he did have some games where he was really accurate, and then there were some games where he was all over the map.
Yeah, no idea what you were going to get game to game. Highly right. Inconsistent.
If he's more consistent, I think a lot of it is going to come down to that. But if we're talking schedule here, their schedule is extremely favorable. They're one of the ACC teams that got a really easy schedule for them. I just had it pulled up. Hold on 1 second. They open with Vanderbilt, though, which, like, that's a nice little SEC win that they get to throw on the board. They play Marshall.
Don't underestimate the Commodores.
They shut up. They travel to Old Dominion. I thought that was a Marshall joke. I realized that's not what you were trying to do. They have Rutgers at home. They travel to Miami, which is going to be a tough game for them. They have to go to Stanford, which is tough to go cross country. Boston College at home, Virginia Tech at home, which I think they're going to beat. They go to Syracuse in the Dome. Clemson at home, which is a huge, huge deal that they get to play them at home. At Duke, and then Virginia at home. There's really only two tough matchups, and they benefit from the fact that Clemson's on their own turf. 9-3, man. 9-3 makes a lot of sense.
Why do you think Colin Shalee comes in, the quarterback from UCLA? Now, if you remember,
they need depth. It's not because they're very high on Drones.
I know they are, but I don't. Maybe you're right about the depth piece. I do think that that's very interesting. I look at their schedule. You brought up Clemson. We're going to continue to do this with Clemson, dude. You know what I keep saying? You know what I was thinking when you talked about Clemson? God, dog, we didn't look at their schedule like it was going to be tough. We keep bringing them up. Well, if they can beat Clemson. Well, if they can beat Clemson. Yeah. Well, if they can beat Clemson. I'm just saying, I think it bolsters Clemson if you continue to have these wins against teams that we think that could have some production. So you can only bring up Clemson so much now, because every ACC team that we have brought up, and we did a deep dive on Clemson, you keep bringing them up there. So just a little side piece for the Tigers. I agree with you. I do question, okay, their run defense. Now, I talked pretty glowingly about them. Joe, 57th in the country last year in run defense, I don't think is great. I think they got better after the passer. They made a lot of explosive plays. The question becomes, you know, is we're thinking, is this going to be the defense that takes the next step, right? Are they going to be the team like, damn, dude, them old Virginia Tech teams that had really good defense, they're pretty freaking good. Yeah, but you got run on heavy bit. You got some dudes that are coming in from the portal. The thing, though, is what they've done in the secondary is the biggest thing that nobody's talking about. Joe, fourth in the country last year in passing yards allowed. Dude, yeah. They're locking dudes down. So I look at that Clemson game, as you bring up. A lockdown secondary against Kay Klubnik. That's the thought that I had. Okay, was that you have a quarterback that, man, if there's pretty good press-to-press man coverage, y'all are in trouble. Kay Klubnik might be in trouble, and that game's at home. So that's when I start building my confidence, ironically, around this Virginia Tech team.
And we had a conversation about Dorian Strong before this. He was one of the best corners in the country. Very experienced. He's a graduate
number one
student.
In the ACC in passes defenses, second in the ACC in interceptions.
Yeah, I really think that their secondary is going to be a strong suit for them. But what really does come back to all of this, and why I really like what Virginia Tech brings to the table in 2024, is that they have a defensive-minded head coach that is a brilliant defensive mind. Mm-hmm. It was long enough ago where I think we kind of forget how good Brent Pry was, especially because of Manny Diaz, how good they were under him. He was better than they were under Brent Pry, but Brent Pry had a really damn good Penn State defense when he was there. And you can see that they're slowly building towards becoming that. You know, they're slowly working their way towards
they're
becoming
good, man.
Diverse. Like,
look, man, I don't know if I have no clue. And this is Virginia Tech fans are going to say, Blake, what in the hell are you talking about? We knew about this guy. Joe, we did our top 10, like, edge rushers, defensive linemen. Dude, there's nobody that has the production of Anquan Powell. No, nobody.
And Antoine Powell.
Or Antoine Powell. Powell Ryan. Say Anquan. Yeah. Antoine Powell. Yeah. I feel like I'm finding the sleeper in the rough that I can tell my buddies about around the water cooler, pun intended, but around the water cooler, that might be the thing. Hey, man, you better watch out for this Powell kid that's at Virginia Tech because he is very explosive. He's really good. To 14 and a half tackles for loss is pure insanity.
I almost, and you're bringing up a good point here, where like a lot of, from a national perspective, Virginia Tech
that's
wasn't
what I was
on our radar.
National,
yeah, you're right.
I didn't end the piece there. We're not talking about him nationally. I feel like I'm, like from a big time standpoint, he's not being talked about. But continue. I'm sorry for.
Well, all I was gonna say is like you, it's the same boat for me. I knew about drones. I knew about Dorian Strong, but for some reason, there hasn't been any national coverage for Antoine Powell Ryland. And this is why I like us doing this series that we do from June to the middle of August, where we get to, this is our way of getting ready for the season. It's doing our notes and learning about these teams and then sharing what we've found and researched to our listeners. And I'm curious to figure out more about this kid. Like I want to actually break down his tape because the production that you're mentioning,
He explodes on tape, bro. I mean, you can't have that many tackles for loss and not be an explosive dude. By the way, Florida transfer.
He's at Florida?
Yeah.
I just texted a good friend of the show, Ryan Roberts, to see if he has any, if he's watched his tape or not.
Okay.
I've seen nobody talk about this kid.
I want to know what we're missing. Back to their defense. Look, Kelly Lawson, okay, had 80 tackles last year, 2.5 tackles for loss, or 2.5 sacks, 7.5 tackles for loss. Look, they're just stacked, man. I mean, when you got a really good back seven, Joe, you can be in any game in today's league. Can they fix the leaks that they had at times in the running game? You bring in some guys. Joe, I think here's the biggest thing for me for them defensively, though. Nine dudes are seniors, okay, or redshirted juniors that are on their two deep or starters. So their backups are dudes that have experience. They've been around the block. And what do we say every year, man? Okay, yeah, you have the Caleb Downs of the world. Well, why was Nick's defense so good this year? He had some really good players. Okay, true. He had a shitload of seniors too. A shitload of older guys that had been there. So bottom line for me is if there's a team in the ACC, I think I might be convinced defensively, I know that they're going to give you something. Joe, it comes down to offensively, what can they do?
Here's the only thing. Are they as good as we think that they could be? Or are they Illinois? Which I fell victim
but
to
see,
this
here's
last
the problem
year where I got
Illinois.
Excited. I got excited about they didn't have a guy at quarterback like Virginia Tech does.
That's
they
where
were stepping
I was
in. Yeah, they were stepping in with Altmaier and he was a bit shaky, very inconsistent. They lost a good bit in their secondary, so it was a little different. But all I'm saying
they lost dudes on their D line too.
Not their two biggest, most important players were coming back at Illinois, though. There was good reason for
Illinois
to be good last year.
High on them,
yeah. Jerjon Newton and Keith Randolph were unbelievable on tape going into the season, and it made a lot of sense, but injuries caught up to them. They had a lot of issues. All I'm saying here is that I don't think it'll happen, but that is the opposite end of the spectrum with Virginia Tech, is that they could just be another Illinois, where you felt really good about them at the end of the season. You were getting really excited and hyped up about the expectations and everything looks great. And then it just fizzles out and doesn't come.
Yeah,
to fruition.
But that good corner that you had is back.
Right.
I mean, Joe, I don't know. And by the way, you know what else? I think that ironically, I can't believe, well, maybe I am. You know, we talk about Virginia Tech. Well, they just don't have the dudes that they used to. They just went and got a couple from the portal that nobody's talking about. Literally. Virginia Tech is a team that nobody's talking about. I'm telling you, they might be the sleeper. I agree with you, though. Can they, if they progress offensively, they're going to be fine. If they take that next step, I think they'll be fine. All right.
Yeah, it's a very good way of putting it.
Let's get to our good friends over at Home Field Apparel. We'll come back. The June signing period got tabled. We'll probably save the Kalen DeBoer stuff for tomorrow, but nevertheless. Yeah. We'll be back next. Stay with us.
Ruffino and Joe Show is brought to you by Home Field Apparel, which is the best, without a doubt, premium collegiate apparel brand that is out there. They have over 150 different colleges that you can choose from, whether you're an Illinois fan or a Rutgers fan. Maybe you're an LSU fan like Blake, or maybe you're an Alabama fan, whatever it is, even Idaho. They have so many different designs for so many different football programs that I can guarantee you're going to find some great stuff to help root for your favorite team. I've already gotten my Notre Dame stuff. Blake has his LSU stuff. Make sure you head on over to homefieldapparel.com to check out your team's collection of clothing apparel that they have on the website. And when you do so, when you check out, make sure you use promo code RuffinoJoe to get 15% off your order. That is RuffinoRuffino Joe. Head on over to homefieldapparel.com and get your college gear today.
I'm telling you, I just saw something else in recruiting.
Is it Joseph, what we were talking about pre-show?
If Kalen DeBoer, dude. Oh. That too. I'm not going to say that one yet.
I can't wait to talk about that tomorrow.
I would just say this. It would seem like USC doesn't have good juju with them. You know, like the old saying goes, they no good juju with them. Maybe that's a Southern thing.
It's probably one of the least kept secrets. I wonder when it happens. And it sounds like it's like 90%, but we don't need to. We're not at the liberty to speak in confirmed detail, because I don't know if it's confirmed yet.
Do you see this Salem Sam say, Joe, please tell Blake that Virginia Tech is not good? I'm pretty sure we had the same exact take.
Why is he hating? I'm more of a Virginia Tech apologist. What?
Yeah.
I said that in the open. Come on.
Brent Venables. Kalen DeBoer is about to get probably another five-star receiver.
That's insane.
I think a lot of people are going to have. Anyway, Joe, we talk about recruiting some on the show, not enough, but there is some big recruiting news, that being that the June signing period has been tabled. Now, from what I'm reading and remember, this has been tabled for the third time. Now, it wasn't as big in the past as this one was. A lot of people thought that was coming because of the new playoff, but it's not. Joe, here's my stance. I know that eventually that there is going to be probably a June signing period, or what I will just call a summer signing period. Mm-hmm. I think you should open up the 3 months. Open up a month. The month of July is commitment. Okay? You can take visits all through June. July is commitment. And if kids want to sign in July, fine. And you know what else? Coaches can try to get all of their kids to sign. Now, the issues that will come there is a coach will get a kid or convince a kid to sign, and he don't want to go there no more. So I don't know if it's very good to have a summer commitment. The big issue that I have is, do you understand what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah. So I wanted to just bring this up really quickly before we continue this point. I didn't know this. So this is what was for the 20. I forget what the exact cycle, what year this was, But the National Letter of Intent website says that basketball, the early signing period is November 8th to the 15th. The regular period is April 17th to the 15th. So that's a month that's that long. Football is early signing period is December 20th to 22nd. It's 2 days. It's extremely short. All other sports are November 8th to August 1st.
Correct.
There's so much longer.
Okay, so that thank you for making my point and giving in other sports. That's my point. Okay? Like, I don't know why everybody is so – you know who's concerned about not having a summer signing period? Coaches. Mm-hmm. Coaches don't want to be going to the playoff having a bulk of their dudes that they got to sign in December. Here's the problem that I have with that. You now legally can go out there and pay recruits to come to your school. Mm-hmm. Nobody is going to challenge you with talking for a recruit to talk to an NIL coordinator about how they're going to pay him all this money. Nico is a big example of that. I'm not going there. But it's a big example of, Joe, why should I feel bad for Kirby Smart, okay, when legitimately he has a base or Ryan Day has a base where they're going to get the top kids because they pay the most? Like, I mean, you're making a shitload of money. Sorry you got to spend an entire day when you're trying to go into the playoffs in recruiting. I get that. Joe, there's a lot of companies that try to hit Q4 numbers going in at the end of the year to make all of their numbers look great. I just don't understand why we're trying to pander to everybody.
Yeah.
Now, what you could say is, okay, that we're pandering to kids, though, by giving them, you know, so many things. What's your thoughts on this being tabled? Because I don't have an issue with it.
I understand both sides of the argument here, and I understand why it got derailed as quickly as it did, like what you're talking about. Because the positive side is a lot of coaches look at it and say, this is too difficult to operate during a playoff run, a bowl season run, and also to try and figure out the transfer portal all in this messy, messy window. A lot of kids these days are signing in that 2-day short early signing period. The other side is you can't sign kids that early before their senior season. It just doesn't work. But I think for the fact that most other sports, like I remember growing up, kids I went to high school with that played lacrosse, played baseball, played all these sports, and they were committed when they were juniors and they signed when they were juniors. Like a lot of them signed really freaking early. If all these other sports are able to do it and it doesn't affect anything, and they kind of have to because spring seasons are too close to graduation, whatever, they should open up the window. I think you bring up a good solution, one that I didn't even think about. If the window is a lot bigger, it's going to make it a lot more simple. Sure, some kids are going to get pressured to do it sooner, but it should be like July, when a lot of important official visits are held and when a lot of kids typically commit.
Well, coaches go on vacation in July. Their argument is that's the only month that I don't have, like, that I have off. And can I tell you?
But it's kind of slowly dying, though, the ability for coaches to do that because a lot of these kids do commit.
But here's the thing, though. Nobody else in the country, people that make tens of millions of dollars less than you a year, Joe, they don't have the luxury of not going into work every single week. They don't get a month off, right? Like normal human beings, I need a month off so that I can recalibrate because everything's a grind. I understand it's a grind. Like I get that. Joe, you're making 1% type money, most of you.
Yeah.
Okay? Not all of you, but most of you are. Spare me your inconveniences for having to work when you're making that caliber of money.
And most of them retire quite early. Most of them don't work until they're 65, 70 in other industries. Well, like a lot of them.
I get you want to go on vacation with your kids.
Yeah.
I get all that. I understand all of that.
I agree with you that aspect of things. This is why I'm so critical of like some coaches. I try not to be critical of players, but like like when people got mad at me we didn't talk about Shane Beamer today. We should probably talk about him tomorrow. Like the whole Shane Beamer thing, for me getting pissed off about him and him being corny, those dudes are making ridiculous amounts of money. they're allowed to be criticized. When they act weird and they don't know how to talk to the media and they're assholes and they're also not good at their job, they deserve to get criticized, okay? Like, that's plain and simple.
Well, and look, it's a profession you chose. Hey, I understand the grind you go on during football. We're in it. Joe, no,
maybe not as much, but yeah, we're a part of it.
No,
we work on Saturdays and Sundays.
But the God's honest truth is we're working our ass off. And you know what? We work our ass off for 1 hour, 3 hours a week. Like, me and you work our asses off to come on the show. What people see for us being on the airways, I don't complain about it. Do you?
No.
Okay. Neither do a lot of Americans make far less money. And I get, look, I know a lot of coaches. Look, one of them I know is going to text me after the show when he's watching and say, hey, what the F are you talking about? I need a break. Well, you know, their whole thing is, well, teachers get a couple months off. Well, then go be a teacher.
Teaching schedule is not really very, not super rigorous. You know, it's like.
Well, no, if you want to go do it, go do it.
Yeah.
Don't tell me you need a month off.
I understand what you're the way that you're trying to relate this, though, is that most other industries.
Can you leave for 10 days and nobody say anything to you at work?
No.
Okay. Neither does any other American.
Right.
And I'm giving you 2 weeks. Joe, the only time that I was off 2 weeks in my entire life was when I had a new baby. And I didn't even get two weeks. I got 7 days.
I can't even, and I haven't been working that long. But one would argue that, you know, an early 20-something, early to mid-20-something shouldn't have enough responsibility on their plate that they're working this much. But I can't remember the last time I've gone over a day without being contacted about something about work. It's just how the country we live in.
Joe,
I'm not complaining.
I had a phone call this morning, Sunday, 7:45 was around the time the guy called me. And I'm like, sponsor of AYS. I'm like, what's up, man? You know, like 7:45 in the morning. Like, what are you doing calling me this early? But you're always having to do stuff on a Sunday. Yeah. All right. We'll see y'all soon. Y'all have a good one, man. Peace.